Since the dawn of civilization, spies of every nation and culture have worked to infiltrate their adversaries and glean the information that will give their side the advantage. The stakes are sky high, the strategies varied and imaginative, and the ultimate sign of success is that no one ever even knew you were there. In each episode, we will explore the moral and ethical gray zones of espionage, where treachery and betrayal go hand in hand with cunning and courage. This is the Spycraft 101 podcast. Welcome to your clandestine classroom. This is episode number 142 of the Spycraft 101 podcast. Today I'm joined by Phil Turney. Phil enlisted in the U.S. Navy in February 1964. He served two tours on the USS Mauna Kea in the waters off Vietnam, then transferred to the USS Liberty, where he served three more tours. In June 1967, he was aboard the Liberty as a Petty Officer Third Class when the ship came under attack by Israeli aircraft and torpedo boats in the Eastern Mediterranean Sea. For his actions that day, he received a Bronze Star with V device and a Purple Heart. Since then, Phil has published three books about the attack on the USS Liberty, including What I Saw That Day and Erasing Liberty. He is currently serving as the president of the USS Liberty Veterans Association. I invited Phil onto the podcast today to discuss the events of June 8th, 1967, and their aftermath, and the cover-up that soon followed from both the U.S. and Israeli governments. But before we dive into this story, I want to say a big thank you to everyone listening who is also supporting me on Patreon, including Christian W. and Frank W. Your monthly contributions there help me keep this podcast going week in and week out. As a way of thanking my patrons, I offer a lot of great freebies and promotions, including free and discounted books and products from the Spycraft 101 store. Patrons also get exclusive access to long-form articles of mine that aren't available anywhere else. If you haven't signed up for my Patreon yet, but you want to, just click the link in the show notes on whatever podcast platform you're listening to right now. Phil, thank you for taking the time to talk to me today.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I appreciate it, Justin. I do want to say that I guess as a little preamble to your show is that folks, whoever's listening out here, out there in the whole wide world, this is probably one of the most important shows you're ever going to listen to. It has to do with world politics. It has to do with intrigue. It has to do with traitors, and it has to do with cover-ups, and probably most importantly, to the survivors, is cold-blooded murder of our shipmates aboard the USS Liberty by the Zionist State of Israel, hired by our government for them to be the hitmen and kill us all, blame it on Egypt, Nasser, and then we go to World War III. That's how close we were. So that's how important this is.
Yeah, it's quite a story, Phil, and I'm glad that we're going to hear it firsthand from you, because who else could tell it better than you could, honestly? I mean, you were right there in the thick of it, as I'm sure that we're going to get into. And as a president of the association, you know, you really speak for the association. So I'm very glad for this opportunity, like I said, because this is something that a few years ago, if you had asked me before I really started reading into it, I would probably have said something like, okay, the Liberty was a ship that was hit in some sort of friendly fire accident in the fog of war, and it was a big mess. And, you know, the more I read into it and the more I've learned about it, you know, I could not have been more wrong. Obviously. So I'm afraid that there are a lot of other people out there that have similar notions, and hopefully we can help dispel that today.
Absolutely. That's the plan. Let's educate people that really know about it, because it affects all of us. That's how important it is. It affects each and every one of us. So I hope everybody just keeps an open mind and not closes off.
Right. Certainly so. So, Phil, let's start with your own personal history then. What was it that led you to join the Navy in the first place?
I joined the Navy because I'd rather work for my dad than go to high school. And then I'd rather go in the Navy than work for my dad. So I quit, and I was 17 years old, went into boot camp, enjoyed it. I was proud to, I think the proudest moment I ever had was giving the oath to our country. Becoming part of it was simply amazing, but that's how it started out. And I liked the Navy. I enjoyed it. I liked the discipline. I needed it, but I accepted it with open arms. Hmm. So that's kind of where I started at.
Okay, I see. And I know that you served aboard ship, of course. What were your normal duties like on a typical duty day on the Mauna Kea and later on the Liberty?
Well, the Mauna Kea was a ammunition ship, a beautiful ship, big ship. And we would get ammo, you know, from Port Chicago. That's where we're based at, right outside of San Francisco. In fact, they had a huge explosion there, probably 80 years back, that blew up the whole port there. But anyway, we would unwrap ships, send over ammunition, bullets. And, you know, the war was really, it was going on a lot more than people thought it was in 64 and 65. It was a lot of work. But these guys aboard those ships were proud Americans doing what they had to do. And unfortunately, bad things happened.
Yeah, certainly so, as I'm sure we'll get into. You mentioned UNREP. That's underway replenishment. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, good. I don't have a Navy background, so I'm not really familiar with a lot of the terminology, unfortunately. So you were off the waters of Vietnam for a time period there on the Mauna Kea then, I take it?
Yes, we weren't within international waters. Don't get me wrong, we're on an ammo ship. We're not going to give ourselves up.
Right.
But we're off the coast, and that went on and on for months, and you just, you know, you do it, and you do it, and then you come back, and you do it again.
Hmm. Okay, I see. So what led to you transferring to the Liberty later on? Is that just a normal transition every few years, or something you volunteered for, or what exactly?
Well, I really didn't volunteer for it. I was assigned to the USS Liberty. In fact, I tried to get off that ship because I was on the USS Amphion. It was a fleet tug, which was good duty. You just stayed at the pier all the time.
Hmm.
And they wouldn't allow that. I went aboard the Liberty, and it was the best thing I ever did.
Okay, so a lot of people have probably heard that name but may not know what the Liberty was. Can you describe the ship? It was very different duty, very different type of ship from the Mauna Kea and the tug that you mentioned, I'm aware.
Yeah, Justin, it was a completely different world. It was the very most sophisticated spy ship in the world, the USS Liberty. And it was the fifth in its class, AGTR-5. A beautiful, proud ship that came out of mothballs. It was a World War II one-wayer, and they turned it into one of the finest spy ships in the world. I was not a spy, per se. I was aboard the Liberty, a ship's company. But my crewmates, the spies, we're all in this together. That's why we're doing this. That's why we're on radio or TV or anywhere we can get, is just figure out something that is best for our country. And our government is, I don't want to get into it. I'm just sorry, but no, I'm not sorry. I'm really not. I'm just frustrated the way we've been treated, Justin. I'm sorry.
No, go on, Phil. That's what we're here for. We want to hear from you.
Well, okay. Here we are. The most trusted men in the world, these guys, well-educated, the Navy educated them to the hilt. They learned all kinds of different things to do with spies. They're spies. That's what they are, CIA, NSA spies. Our duty aboard the Liberty was to take care of them. Wherever they wanted to go, we had to get them there, and we did. We always got them there. And I'll tell you something about the engineers, too. That was me. We brought it back. We brought that ship back. We stayed with it. Even though they wanted us to get off, I wouldn't leave. Said, I'm staying here. I brought her here. I'm going to take her home. But anyhow, well, let's go before the Savage attack and how it happened.
Phil, you mentioned that there were NSA and CIA personnel on board. Were you, like, intermingling with them freely, or were they berthed separately or anything like that? I mean, was there, like, a kind of a separation or a compartmentalization on board the Liberty at that time?
Yes, there was. It was completely exactly as you mentioned it. It was, you stay in your place and we'll stay in ours. Don't talk to each other. You know, don't converse. That's just the way it was. It was two different ships aboard that ship. But you get right down to it, we were all the same people. I mean, these guys are spies. They're not going to be telling us anything. Mm-hmm. They know better. I mean, come on. They didn't go through this training and they go back to their great-great-great-great-grandpa to find out if they ever did anything wrong. No, these guys are professionals, professional spies. And we were on the ship to take care of them, which we did.
So how large was the USS Liberty? I've seen the photos of it. Like, how big was the crew? How many people on board?
294 souls. Two-thirds of the crew were spies.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Two-thirds of the crew were spies. The rest of us were ship's company, you know, in engineering, damage control, bosun mates, quartermasters, things of that nature.
Okay, I see. I was expecting it to be a far lower number than that, honestly, like below 50 out of the 294 that you mentioned, but that's significant, certainly. So because you were assigned to this very unique vessel, did it change the way that you perform your duties in any way? Like, you can't tell your family where you're going or how long you'll be gone, anything like that?
Yeah, I didn't get that because everybody knew where we were going until we got set up to be murdered. Hmm. But no, everybody, you know, we'd go on cruises. I was on the three different cruises, including the last. Hey, we'd go out to sea. We'd go out the coast of Africa. The CTs would say, hey, we got to go here or there. We'd go back and forth up and down the coast of Africa, you know, 4 or 5 knots and where they could get a good contact and everything. It was actually a good time. I mean, it was good duty. You know, good people. And then all of a sudden, in 1967, we were in port in Africa, because that's where we always were, as I said. And we get emergency orders to get the hell out of there for unknown ports at that moment. So then they got everybody aboard, and we took off fast as we could.
I see. And was the Liberty, was she typically, like, unescorted? Like, were you guys on your own out there typically on your missions?
We were always alone. So we steamed alone at all times.
Okay.
At all times. Now, interesting, when you said that, we went into the med. We knew there was a war going on. And we asked for some kind of escort, a destroyer escort, a rowboat, anything. In case something goes wrong, this is, no, you don't need it because you're a flagged American ship in international waters. So that's exactly what they said.
Mm-hmm. I see. And I understand that you had, what did you have any armaments on board, even like deck mounted machine guns or anything like that at all? Any defenses?
We had 250 caliber gun mounts on the starboard side and the port side. And we had two on the same sides, port and starboard, up above the bridge. So we had 450 caliber machine guns, and that was our only armament. And that was only meant for, Justin, is for repel boarders, like we were in port and somebody tried to get aboard our ship and whatever. It's not to fight jet fighters, I can tell you that.
Right. Yeah, it's hard to imagine. I know it's a heavy machine gun, but out at sea at those distances that you might be engaged, that's really not much at all in the end, as I'm
well aware. It was kind of redundant anyway, because it was destroyed in the first 3 seconds of the attack.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So we had no armament. We were alone with our hands and our wits and our will to live.
My gosh. So I know that you mentioned, of course, that the mission, the spy mission, was compartmentalized at the time. how much more do you know now in the aftermath of all of this, like about the capabilities and the mission that you were actually on? Is there much about that that you can speak to at the moment?
I can speak to what I know. And this is, you know, breaking national security or nothing like that. Hey, listen, these guys were spies. They were there to listen on whoever. They were forbidden to listen to any Israeli traffic, Hebrew traffic, or United Kingdom. Drop it immediately. And I know this because I've been told this by my shipmates.
Hmm.
And as well as Commander David Lewis, who has since passed, who was the head spy on that ship. So this comes from very reliable sources.
Hmm. I'm very surprised by that, honestly, that because you're kind of passively, or they were kind of passively taking it in. You know, it's very different from, you know, say entering an embassy or something along those lines, you know, the kind of thing I've talked about here in the past, but just kind of passively scooping up anything that comes your way across the airwaves. I would not expect it to be such harsh rules like that, but I guess I was wrong.
Yep, that's the way it was. That was part of the cover up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it all fits. Things just don't happen; they're meant to happen.
Mm-hmm.
This was meant to happen. They thought they got by with it, and they did. But we're still here fighting for the truth. We're fighting for our country. Mm-hmm. That's how important this is.
I agree.
This is so important, what they did. We're the biggest whistleblowers in the world. And you guys better listen to us because we're not lying. You think we'd lie about something like this? The most trusted spies in America, you think they'd lie about something like this?
Yeah, I don't. I imagine, certainly. So, Phil, you were in port in Africa, like you mentioned, and you get, I take it, you get orders to steam to the Eastern Mediterranean. And I know that at that time, the Six-Day War, what we call now the Six-Day War, had begun. So can you talk about that situation that you were headed towards at that time prior to June 8th?
We were the only ones going that way. Everybody else was going the other way in the Med. Everybody's going the other way, getting the hell out of there, and we were going the other way. There was a civilian spy ship in that area in the Med called the SS Valdez. They could have very well done exactly what we did, but I guess sinking the Valdez wasn't as sexy as sinking the USS Liberty with 294 men aboard.
Phil, were you, at that time, was there anything prior to the morning of June 8th, was there anything unusual from your perspective that was going on? I mean, you already mentioned that you were denied any sort of destroyer escort or anything like that. Was there anything else that stood out prior to that morning?
Yeah, there was a lot that stood out. It was a beautiful day. Our flag was up, beautiful, brand new flag in the wind. And our friends, the Israelis, were buzzing us and tipping their wings. And we were happy to see them, you know, because we were in a war zone. We could see what was going on all over there, the bombs, but the black smoke, everything. We were there. I mean, we were there, right there. We could see it. We were happy to see the Israelis because we thought the Arabs were going to come get us, sink us, or try to kill us. But clearly marked Israeli aircraft, fixed-winged, with the Star of David on them, taking pictures of our ship over and over again, tipping their wings, being very friendly. And that was all done to take pictures of every watertight door on that ship, tuning antenna aboard that ship. They knew exactly where it was. Yeah, it was kind of a little letdown, you know?
Mm-hmm. And can you talk a little bit about what was actually going on the ground there? Like, this war had just begun, of course. What was the situation? Like, who were the enemy forces? How was Israel faring at the moment that you arrived? That sort of thing?
You know, I don't think any of us knew really how the war was going. We just knew it was going on. We could see the bombs and smoke and everything like that. I never even, in fact, that's the first time anybody's ever asked me that. No, you know, we never thought or knew exactly who was winning and who was losing. We were rooting for the Israelis. We were aboard that ship. Of course we were. They were our allies. We thought.
I see. So can you just go ahead and then take us through that day, take us through June 8th from start to finish? I'm sure that you know, remember every detail even now.
Yeah, I'll do the best I can. The day started out like any other day and beautiful sky. I mean, it's just beautiful, beautiful day. I mean, you can't imagine how pretty it was and beautiful blue water, calm, and there's a war going on. But the overflights came, the airplanes came, as I said earlier, and they circled and circled, and then they left. We did a general quarters. It was a chemical drill, washing down the ship, pretending like you're washing it down. We secured from that. That was a little before, too. There was a problem with the sound power phones on the gun mount. And I asked a nice seaman, David Skolak, to come up there and see if he could take care of it. Nice guy, young guy, beautiful kid. I just left that gun mount, and about 30 seconds later, that gun mount blew up, and he was blown to bits along with the gunnerman, Thompson. And the attack was on. Over and over and over, jet aircraft, machine guns, rockets, cannons. Napalm, they dropped napalm on our ship.
Napalm?
Yeah. Yeah, they did. They sure did. And this went on for about, I don't know, 30 minutes, 25, 30 minutes with the jet aircraft. Then came to the torpedo boats. And Jess said, we didn't know who was attacking us because the planes were unmarked. We had no idea. We thought it was the Egyptians. What else would we think? But it was the Israelis. Here come the torpedo boats. We could see the Star David on them. I thought, oh, great. These guys are coming to help us, man. Finally, you know, our own government didn't come help us, which we didn't find out till a little bit later that they recalled the jet aircraft to help us. But I'll get into that. But the torpedo boats came up. They fired five torpedoes at us. And one of them killed my friends. And we were just a ship alone. Our country recalled the jet aircraft in this two-hour bloodbath. Johnson and McNamara recalled the aircraft and said he wouldn't embarrass his ally over a few dead sailors.
Really?
Yes.
The president said that. My gosh.
Yes.
How long did the attack last, Phil? Like, was it an hour, 2 hours, more?
As long as the attack on Pearl Harbor, 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
And nobody ever came help us. Our own government wouldn't even come help us when help was only 40 minutes away. It was 17 hours. We had just taken almost a damn near 40 by 40 foot torpedo hole on our side. We were all alone. And our government couldn't even send a Piper Cub over to help us. They left us out there to sink. And we damn sure almost dead.
Yeah, Phil, I don't know how you and the remaining crew members kept it afloat, honestly, because I've seen some of the photos and the damage is just unbelievable. Like, I don't know how it's not at the bottom of the Med right now. Well, I do know it's because of your work, you and your crewmates, but it's amazing that you were able to save the ship in that condition.
Well, I give all power to God. That's what I believe. I'll always believe that. As far as I'm concerned, I'm here now. Because it's time, you know, God never leaves me. And it's time that his glory is known. He saved our ship. We didn't save it. We were his instruments, but he saved it. We didn't. For that, that's why we're still here, fighting for the right thing, Justin, just the right thing. We don't want any special treatment, just the right thing.
Yeah, it's a long time coming, that's for certain. So, Phil, this torpedo strike, where did it actually strike on the ship? Like, which compartment?
Well, the torpedo hit on the starboard side, right in the communication center where all the spies were. When that torpedo exploded, it picked the whole ship up out of the water.
My gosh.
And then it came slamming back down. Boom, boom, boom. And then it started to tip over to the starboard side and just stopped. Just stopped. Unbelievable.
Truly, truly is. So, Phil, did you and the crew, did you think initially that this was a case of mistaken identity? I mean, what was your reaction when that machine gun mount that you mentioned first exploded?
Well, again, I didn't know who was doing it exactly at the time, but I was pissed off. And when I found out Israel were the culprits and they're covering it all up, yeah, pissed. You damn right I'm pissed. I've been pissed. All my shipmates have been pissed. Hey, listen, they set us up to be murdered. Our own government. We were dead men walking, and we didn't know it. They send you into a hellhole like that to be assassinated by an ally, supposed ally. That doesn't compute with me, not one bit.
Right. Well, I know, Phil, the big question for everyone, and I'm assuming for you as well, is why? Why would they choose to attack the Liberty that day? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's a very good question, Justin. My thoughts are, and it's pretty clear, we were set up by our government. There's no doubt about that. Sacrificial lambs to be led to slaughter for the greater good of Israel. Now, the United States was willing to go to World War III with this. They had launched SAC aircraft with nuclear bombs in them, headed to Cairo even before we got attacked. There were submarines in the area, Russian and American. So if we sink, Justin, you got to remember this, people. If we sink, there's no telling how this world would look right now. Not that it's really good right now. It's awful.
So the use of these unmarked aircraft that you mentioned, do you think that they had a plan in place to blame, I guess, Egypt, for example, for an attack on a United States Navy vessel?
That's exactly the plan. That was always the plan. The day we left port from Virginia, that was the plan. It's always been the plan. That's exactly right. This plan was not thought out in a week or 2 weeks. It was probably a year, year and a half, 2 years in advance. No, this is bad government cover-up stuff, believe me. And nobody wants to listen to it.
Mm-hmm. So I understand that this was 67 in particular, the Six-Day War was a very, very close thing for Israel. Like they almost lost the war completely. And of course, they've always been surrounded on all sides by, you know, Jordan, Egypt, Syria, of course. And did they feel like bringing in the United States was the only thing that was going or dragging the United States into that conflict was the only thing that was going to save them? Do you think that's the calculation that they made, or was there something else going on as well, perhaps?
Well, I think there was a lot going on, either or, but for sure it was a land grab. It absolutely was a land grab. You know, the United States backing all that. They got what they wanted, but they didn't get us sunk. That's what they really wanted. Both governments. They're equally guilty of murder and treason. Equally guilty for what they did to our country, not just us, but our country. Can you imagine that? Setting your own servicemen up for death? Now, does it get any worse than that?
It's bad. It's bad. No question about it. Phil, do you think or do you know that there were people within the U.S. government who were aware of the intent for this plausibly denial attack on the Liberty? Do you think that they had advance notice anywhere in Washington, the Pentagon, anything like that?
That's a good question. I wish I could answer all of it. I do know this. It was a very tight circle. or even if you could call it a circle, it was Johnson, McNamara. You know, I wish I could tell you the insights of everything. I just don't know it. I wish I knew how people could do this or concoct it. Sometimes I just think, what am I being think about this for? How could anybody do that? But it did happen.
Before we go on, I want to tell you all about a new podcast from Tenderfoot TV called To Die For. Imagine you were a fly on the wall at a dinner between the Mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where this unprecedented podcast begins. Brought to you by the makers of the hit podcast To Live and Die in L.A., To Die For marks the first time a Russian-trained honey trap has told her story from beginning to end. Taught to seduce men for their secrets, and sometimes their lives, Alia Rosa was trained to believe that her body no longer belonged to her. It belonged to the state. She was meticulously trained to be the perfect weapon, able to seduce her targets into compromising situations that have ended careers, and sometimes lives. From Tenderfoot TV, the studio that brought you Up and Vanished, and To Live and Die in L.A. Make sure you check out To Die For, available beginning on March 26th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I know there have always been people. There have always been people in the U.S. who, you know, want to see Israel grow stronger, no question about it, in the Middle East. And the war did work out to their advantage in a very big way, as you just mentioned. I know they ended up with more territory and a much stronger position against their enemies by the end of that war, even if this particular aspect of the plan did not work out as they had hoped. But do you know if they had any, have you learned in the aftermath anyway, were there any press releases or anything like that? Or did they communicate that Egyptian aircraft had attacked a U.S. Navy vessel in the Med, for example?
No, but that would have been hot off the presses if it was sunk, believe me.
Right.
So, no, that didn't happen. But no, that was, the ink was still wet on that one.
I gotcha. Yeah. So during this 2-hour period, can you tell us about the actions of yourself and the rest of the crew? Were you focused entirely on damage control, or were you trying to? Well, I have to assume that you were, you know, signaling for support from the nearby U.S. forces and that sort of thing. What else was going on the ship?
Well, yeah, I mean, after the attack, and, you know, we just all did what we could do to stay alive, to help our shipmates. Hey, listen, it was a sea of bodies, bloody. You just work through it, man. You do all you can do. But that ship really came together.
Yeah, earlier, Phil, you mentioned that it was like there were two crews, two ships, and I have to imagine that after this, you were one.
Oh, yeah. It was pretty incredible. You know, this whole deal is not really about payback. Well, I'll take that back a little bit. Yeah, it is a little bit of payback. The simple reason the way our government has treated us, like we're lepers, we're traitors, we're worthless, no good people. The only reason our government is doing this is because they know they got caught. How many strong people in Congress? Have they got any kahunas to bring us in front of Congress? Probably not. Probably none of them. And I hope they listen to me, because I'm asking you. Get the most decorated crew in United States history for a single engagement in front of you and listen to the truth, or are you two cowards? You're two cowards for American servicemen. That's my pledge to you. We'll be there. Just get us. Just tell us you'll have us there. We'll walk there. But that's my message to those people on both sides of the aisle.
Yeah, Phil, that was a big part of what I wanted to talk about here, was the aftermath of this, because the Liberty did not sink according to plan, of course. So what was the reaction, not just in the next couple of days, but in the next few months and years? Can you talk about how the crew was treated and how Israel kind of officially responded after it was clear that you were not going to sink?
Their response is just like the Board of Inquiry. It was a case of mistaken identity. It never was about mistaken identity. Everybody knew it. Justin. Everybody knew it. All the higher ups knew it. The Attorney General knew it. Everybody knew it. Everybody knew it. But they were not going to go against their masters in Israel or the United States of America. And that's just exactly what happened. It continues to this day because of that very fact. The crew of the USS Liberty is dangerous to them, and they know it. Why we're dangerous is we can tell the truth. That's why all these Congress people, they get up there, they talk, but they won't talk to us. What's wrong with us, guys? Figure it out. You want to save your country? We'll help you. We'll show you how to do it.
So, Phil, since Israel acknowledged that it was, I guess they acknowledged that it was one of their torpedoes and their boats and aircraft eventually, but they just said that they thought you were an Egyptian freighter or something like that. Did they make any sort of amends or any sort of offers of amends at all in the aftermath of this?
Well, yeah, it was nothing. I mean, it was like $6 million for the ship. The ship alone cost $40 million then. That's a lot of money, you know, the 60s. So they gave him $6 million for the ship and the rest of us idiots that were aboard the ship. I received $250 for my clothes. So that's what I got out of Israel.
For your clothes, like they were destroyed or damaged or something like that, like a reimbursement?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Clothing reimbursement.
Listen, I signed that. I'll tell you why I signed it. For $250. I didn't want their filthy, dirty money to begin with. I'm not going to assign on to something that I don't believe in. You know, I don't want your money. I want it out because I didn't believe in my government. I didn't trust them. I still don't. You know, how could you trust people that try to murder you? And we're eyewitnesses to cold-blooded murder and nobody wants to listen to us. I mean, what kind of country we live in here? There's got to be a reason for life. There's got to be a reason for justice. That's all we want is justice, not just for us, but America. You deserve the truth, man. You need the truth. I'm telling you, it'll help you understand how crooked our government really is.
Yeah, it really is incredible to pull back the curtain on this and other incidents that have occurred over the past century. There really is a lot out there that is poorly understood by people and has been intentionally obscured or denied. No question about it.
Well, if they don't know about it, they can't learn about it.
Right.
You can take it, you know, as it is, in black and white, weigh our side and weigh their side and see where it comes up. Mm-hmm. It's all about credibility, and we have it, and our government has none.
Right. No doubt about it. So, Phil, you mentioned the Israeli response. What about the Navy? There must have been some sort of incident investigation or after-action review or something like that, right? Like, how was that handled, I guess, with such a, what they would consider a very delicate situation, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, it was a kangaroo court. We told them what happened. We were brought up in front of an admiral. I personally was with four other guys in sick bay. This is a flag admiral now. Along with his aide, he's a captain, he's a lawyer, JAG officer. And he asked us, how's things going? How are things working out? And we're trying to get to the bottom of this and everything. And so I went ahead and testified along with the other guys in the sick bay. I apologize, I don't know all their names, but that's been a lot of years ago. Mm-hmm. He took off his stars, talked to all of us. And I asked him, why didn't help come to us? And he didn't say anything. But before that, he said, I'm just like your dad. Took off his stars, threw them on the table, and says, you tell me anything. Just tell me. I want to hear all you got to say. And we told them, you know, what they did, how they massacred us, dropped napalm on us, all that. It's like I'm telling you. And he put his stars back on. He got right in front of my face because I asked him questions because I was pissed off. Anybody would be. I thought this guy was there to help us. No, he wasn't there to help us. He was there to shut us up. He gets right in my face and his face gets beat red and he says, I'm going to tell you something, sailor. Don't you ever repeat a word which you just said to me, or I'll make sure you end up in the penitentiary worse or dead. So that's how my life's been.
So prior to this meeting with the Admiral, Phil, had you realized that there was going to be some sort of cover up, like were the signs there right after the attack, or were you expecting some sort of justice to come anytime now that never came?
The signs were all there, man. I mean, it's easier to look back at the signs now and see them all, but at that point, you know, you sure. really don't see everything. But we knew we were getting screwed and they were covering this whole damn thing up. But how do you, Justin, how in God's sake can you cover up murdering your own American sons and trying to murder the rest of us for political bullshit, for land, for greed, all of the above? You can't treat decent Americans that way. Put their hand up and swear to God to protect. Yeah.
Would not have thought that this kind of thing was possible until it actually happened, certainly.
No. Hey, listen, man, I've been living with this a long time, so has my shipmates, but mm-hmm. it still boggles my mind. It really does. You think about it. Oh, my God, how do we survive? And why are we here and why are we still doing this? Well, we're still doing this because we leave no man behind. These guys were young men just like we were, and they were dead and they were slaughtered and blown up. They didn't deserve that. We're not going to forget them.
Phil, how many casualties were there that day on the Lurie?
Well, there was 174 wounded and 34 casualties. Two-thirds of the crew were either dead or wounded.
Two-thirds of the crew. My gosh. Yeah, I don't know how you guys held it together that day, how you kept the ship afloat, how you took care of the wounded. It seems like an impossible task, really.
Jefferson, I'm going to tell you something, my friend. You can do anything if it comes down to it. It's in the human spirit. Mm-hmm. That's what we had. We wanted to live. We didn't want to see our shipmates die. That mm-hmm. happened right in front of me. I was helping in an operation with Doc Kiefer. This young guy had been shot up. I was holding the battle lantern. It's a big light. And Doc cut him open. A few moments later, he's dead. And the really sad part for me is I talked to him just before he died, and he looked at me and says, "You think I'm going to die? You think I'm going to die?" And I said, "Yeah, I think you are." And I wish I wouldn't have said that, but I wasn't going to lie to him.
Well, I've never found myself in a situation like that, Phil. And, you know, I really regret that you were put in that situation and that he was as well.
Yeah, no doubt.
So, Phil, after all of this, what happened to the ship? What happened to the Liberty? Was she repaired?
Yeah, we went into Malta, by the way, 1,000 miles from where we got blown up. 1,000 miles with almost a 40-by-40-foot hole in the side of the ship. I mean, how much more couldn't they do to us? You know, they sent us to the farthest port in Malta. We could have went to Crete.
Hmm. Really?
Yeah, where they hope the ship just breaks apart, and there goes the rest of the evidence. But anyway, we went to Malta, stayed there 33 days, and repaired the ship, tried to make it look like new, and sent us on our way. And the ship was sold for scrap in 1968. So It was turned into razor blades. They got rid of all the evidence. The only evidence that they haven't gotten rid of us is us yet. Oh, I hear a knock on the door. No, I mean, hey, listen, we're here. I'm sorry. I'm not going to quit harping on this. I'm not sorry. This is in national interest, people. I'm telling you, this is in the national interest of the United States of America to listen to us. We're not a bunch of crazy people. We're here because we love our country. We love our citizens. We love America. We love our way of life. And we're going to lose it if we have politicians slaughtering our servicemen all in their greater glory of enrichment or retirement. So that's where we're at, and that's what we want to stop. That's what we want to help with. So I hope you send this to everybody you can, every senator, anybody, radio stations, Newsmax, all of them. Of course, all I'm trying to say is all of them. That'd be good. It would help us out so much, and that's what we need.
Yeah, I certainly understand. I'm doing my best to spread this story and many others as far and wide as I can. I promise you, Phil.
I know it, man. I know it. I just get, you know how it goes, Justin. You just want more as fast as you can.
Yeah. And so since you brought up the point about the knock on the door, Phil, have you ever felt threatened or pressured at least to stop talking, to stop writing, to stop advocating for the remaining crew? Has that ever occurred in any way for you?
Yes, it has. Up close and personal. In San Diego, California, 3, 4, 5, I don't know how many years back, my beautiful bride and I were sitting at the bar waiting for a seat to open to, we were going to have dinner. And this guy sits down right beside of me. And he says, oh, you're USS Liberty, huh? And I said, yeah. I started talking. And I didn't know how he knew me, but he knew I was there. So we talked a little bit, and he had a great big watch on, Justin, a great big watch. It looked like a spotlight almost. I said, he had it right in my face. I said, get that out of my face, man. I don't want you doing that bullshit. Pushed it away, and he proceeds to keep on going with his mouth and everything. And he says, you know, you should quit talking about the USS Liberty. It's not good for you. I'm Mossad. I said, oh, okay. My wife is a spirited redhead. She got up and she called him every freaking name in the book. They escorted us out of there. But come to find out, I tried to track this guy down, see who he really was. He was supposed to be some kind of a doctor. He came in there and saved his doctor. He's been in that place 2 days before we got there. So they knew I was there. He knew I was there. And he tried to rattle our cage real bad. You know, you get threatened like that up personal, you never know what the hell's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's happened. You're damn right. Hey, we've been called Nazis and Jew haters and racist pigs and everything else just because we're telling the truth and we stayed alive to do it. I mean, we're the bad guys. And we're trying to help America and tell the truth. And we get labeled as bad people, Jew haters and Nazis. Listen, we didn't kill anybody. They did all the killing. They're the ones that shot the life rafts up. We were going to put our most seriously wounded in. They're the ones that did that.
My gosh. It's an upside down world. The way that you guys have been treated, no question about it.
Well, Justin, you know, I believe it wholeheartedly. It's even more than that, man. It's American values. And we got to get that back. And the USS Liberty is a good start for it. I really believe that. I think we're meant here to stay here, stay alive, to get this done because America needs it right now. Our country's, well, it's bad off anyway, but you know that. But other than that, dude, I just don't know what else to do but keep on plugging.
I hear you. I hear you, Phil. So, for you personally, what did you do after all of this? Like, how much longer did you stay in the Navy?
I got out December the 12th in 67. I wasn't in the Navy.
Oh, wow.
Why would I?
Right. Right. I'm sure you were disgusted with it at that point.
Right. But disgust turns into despair. I had a young family.
Mm-hmm.
And, hell, nobody was really hiring for at least a fair wage. And so guess what I did? I joined the Navy again.
Oh, boy.
I went aboard the USS Maddox, DD-731. It was involved in the Gulf of Tonkin incident.
Hmm.
Yeah, but that's the ship I was on. And then I got out. I never looked back to the Navy again.
Man, that is an incredible coincidence there, because I've talked about Gulf of Tonkin briefly in a previous episode and how that was not what it appeared either.
Well, according to the people I was there with, it wasn't what everybody thought it was either. So
yeah, that's another thing that I didn't really understand a few years ago until I really started looking into it and studying up on it at all. And, you know, a few people were trying to get the truth out early on, but they were overpowered and overshadowed in a big way because the interest in blowing up that incident into something that it wasn't kind of overpowered the need to tell the truth.
Yeah, need to overpower getting 58,000 plus dudes killed with that crazy, stupid war. They used anything they could use to better their own world and not the service member. I firmly believe that they use people. Well, look at, for God's sakes, just look at Abby Gate. I mean, 13 young, beautiful lives, serving their country, given oath to, and they just left them there, and they got blown up. They left everything there, and many Americans, and wow, American lives are just getting, they're not worth anything anymore. They should be.
I know exactly what you mean. You know, watching that play out in real time as it happened was really disheartening and really hurtful for people that were on the other side of the world from it, but felt like they were right there as well. And I've talked to a lot of people that felt that way about it at all. It's really left a scar on a huge portion of the population of this country, no doubt about it.
As well it should. As well it should.
Yep. So you served two separate enlistments in the Navy. Did you get out after that second enlistment, or did you stay in for longer?
No, I got out right after, I spent my time on the Maddox and got out. You know, and that was it with the Navy for me. It's kind of it for me for the Navy. It has been that for a while because the Navy wants nothing to do with us. The National Security Agency doesn't want anything to do with us. The CIA community wants nothing to do with us. We can't even get a color guard to come to Arlington to honor the six main men that are entombed in that grave.
Really?
No, last time we were there, we were supposed to be an admiral there or something, and they blew us off. Come on, man. How much more do they want us to take? How much more America to take? This has got to stop. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I guess I better get off here, man.
I can see that it really stays with you, Phil, in a big way. I can hear the emotions coming out even after so much time. And I can see the pictures and I can hear you talk about it, but I will never really understand what it was like to be on the ship that day and the aftermath and feel so let down by what happened as well. I don't think anybody except for you guys could really understand that.
Well, yeah, you're right there. There's no doubt. But hey, it takes people like you and others and, your staff and everything to get. I mean, the truth matters and this subject matters and we need to get it done. And yeah, it hurts what they did. We're bigger than that. We're big boys. We got big boy pants on. We'll run with this till we're dead.
Mm-hmm.
So I just hope to hell that people start listening, Justin. But again, thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So I want to ask you too, Phil, about the Liberty Veterans Association. I know that you're president of that. Can you talk about your activities and your goals and that sort of thing with the association?
Sure. Yeah. Our goals have always been the same, the truth, and honoring our shipmates, the ones that didn't make it home, the ones that have passed since, that have worked hard for our goals, but wasn't for the luxury or to carry on as we all, go. We carry on in their name to get the truth out, nothing but the truth. We have nothing to hide. That's our goal. Now, this isn't a plea. It's just the way I feel inside is that there's so many good people out there. If they only knew the truth, they would understand and come to our side and help us get justice. And that's what I really, really hope for.
Mm-hmm. So for people listening and for people who read your book or find the website, what are you looking for from them besides an understanding of what really happened? Like, are you looking for, writing the congressman for support for some, like a bill or anything or a finding or what exactly, like what's a goal that they could potentially help you reach?
Well, if you talk about Congress, if you ever write them, be prepared to be lied to. So listen, we've tried Congress. They're worthless. They are worthless. I wouldn't waste my time writing them.
Man, what a shame.
It's Jesus, man. But it's been that way. It's been that way with, you know, going back to a long time ago. But no, none of them wants anything to do with it. It's going to take America to do it. It's going to take people like us, man. Grassroots people who give a shit. That's just exactly the way it is. Mm-hmm.
What would you like to see happen, or what would the association really like to see happen now? I'm trying to think of some sort of like tangible goal or something like that beyond people really understanding what happened that day. Is there anything like a, you know, an official acknowledgement, an apology from the Israeli government or something like that? Would that mean anything to you at this point?
No, it wouldn't mean anything to me from our government or Israel. I don't want an apology from either or. All I want is the truth. I mean, let the people of America decide that. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, are you kidding me? Accept apology for me witnessing my own shipmates being murdered? And you would dare to come up and ask me for an apology would be good enough? No. No apology could change that. Actions change that.
Yeah, I had a feeling that far too much time had passed for any words to mean anything at this point.
Oh, yeah. Way far gone. They would never do it anyway. So it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree with that. It's not a worthwhile pursuit, really, because you wouldn't get the satisfaction that you were seeking, no doubt about it.
Satisfaction, I guess, Justin, is in the eyes of the beholder. But for me, personally, and I think my own shipmates would agree, is we got you. You know what I'm saying?
Hmm.
We got you. And we do, if they just listen to us.
Mm-hmm.
That's why what you're doing, man, is so important. No shit. It's just great.
Well, I'm glad to connect with you and glad to hear it all from you and help amplify that message a little bit in any way that I can.
I know that, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's a good deal. You know, how far this goes, I don't know, but I hope it goes good. We'll see. Yeah. You never know. One little thing can happen because God works in mysterious ways, believe me.
I know it. No question about it. Thank you, Phil. This has been really, really eye-opening, no question about it. And I really appreciate your time here. What we'll do is we will link up the website for the Liberty Veterans Association in the show notes of this episode so that the listeners can find it. Thank you so much. Take care, Phil. If you're interested in more of Spycraft 101, look for my page on Instagram at Spycraft101. You can also find more great articles on my website, spycraft101.com. Thank you all for listening, and I hope you'll stick around because there's lots more to come.
Disclaimer. This podcast is for entertainment purposes only. The stories and statements expressed herein are experiences and opinions. They may not reflect the views of the host or the production studio. It's okay if you disagree with our content. No piece of media is right for everyone. If you love Spycraft 101, please check us out online, on Instagram, on YouTube, and especially on Patreon. Thank you for listening.